If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Missiles hit Ukraine's capital during a visit by the UN Secretary General. Plus, consumer goods companies feel the pinch from the war in Ukraine. And Airbnb says its employees can now work from almost anywhere in the world, and it hopes other companies follow suit.
They're essentially saying, hey, we'll do the dirty work for you. We're going to make all our human resources, payroll, taxes, all of our solutions public.
It's Friday, April 29th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres says he was shocked after two missiles hit the Ukrainian capital Kyiv while he was there on Thursday night. Guterres had been in Kyiv to meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky after meeting Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow earlier this week. Guterres said the UN will continue to push for a full-scale ceasefire while expanding cash assistance. Shares of Alibaba and other Chinese technology companies have jumped by double-digit percentages, leading a broader market rally on investor hopes that China's government would do more to support the sector and the wider economy. Earlier, China's top policymaking body, the Politburo, said that the government should roll out policies to support the economy, stabilize consumption, and invest effectively to support growth. That's according to the state-run Xinhua News Agency. WSJ China Markets reporter Rebecca Fung has more.
It seems clear from the statements that the policymakers are aware of the potential impact and challenges facing the Chinese economy because of the COVID policies. During the meeting, they said that they would strive to achieve the previous GDP growth goal, which is 5.5% for the entire year, which many economists and analysts have said that it seems very ambitious to reach.
We are exclusively reporting that the U.S. Labor Department has criticized Fidelity Investments plans to allow investors to allocate up to 20% of their 401k retirement accounts to Bitcoin. That's according to the Acting Assistant Secretary of the Employee Benefits Security Administration, Ali Kawar, who told the Wall Street Journal that he views cryptocurrency as speculative and that the agency has grave concerns with what Fidelity has done. In response to the Labor Department's comments, Fidelity said its Bitcoin offering is part of its response to, quote, steadily growing demand for digital assets across investor segments, and added that, quote, this technology and assets will represent a large part of the financial industry's future. And Tesla chief executive Elon Musk sold roughly $4 billion worth of Tesla stock in the 2 days after agreeing to buy Twitter for $44 billion, according to regulatory filings made public late Thursday. Musk is on the hook to come up with $21 billion in cash to finance the Twitter deal. Musk tweeted Thursday, "No further Tesla sales planned after today." The Tesla boss didn't immediately respond to a request for comment about whether he sold shares in the company on Thursday. What is the earnings impact for McDonald's when it can't sell a Big Mac in Moscow? When Mondelez International's biscuit factories in Ukraine are damaged in fighting, or when ingredient prices around the world continue to soar for consumer goods makers. With earnings season now solidly underway, WSJ consumer goods reporter Sabara Chowdhury joins us to survey the various challenges this industry is facing now. Hi, Sabara. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. So what are these companies reporting in their earnings, and what are they saying in particular about disruptions stemming from the war in Ukraine?
So I think it's helpful to maybe look at this in just three separate buckets. The first one being, what is the impact in Ukraine itself? Few Western companies have really big operations in there, but a small number of companies like Carlsberg, the big brewer, they have taken quite a big hit to profits from things like just the breweries being closed, obviously in a war-torn region. They haven't really been able to sell the way they used to. The second one is what's happening on the ground in Russia. So you mentioned McDonald's, you know, they have 850 restaurants almost there. They've sort of had to keep paying staff and they've had inventory they haven't been able to sell because the restaurants have been closed. And so you have assets that are just sitting on the shelf. You have companies that have maybe decided to pull back or exit Russia altogether. And then the third bucket is just the knock-on effect, right? From all the commodities that have been hit because of this war. So everything from energy prices to like edible oils to wheat to barley, everything that's been impacted, that's all really feeding into company earnings. And now we have this additional shock of these commodities rising very sharply. And that's also just a huge theme we're seeing across the board in basically every company's earnings.
And that commodity shock seems like it could be exacerbated by the news this week that Indonesia is banning exports of palm oil. What effect could that have?
Yeah, so that will definitely have a big impact because palm oil is so ubiquitous. It's used in so many different types of foods. It's also used in personal care products like skin creams and moisturizer. And I think what's interesting to note is the genesis of this is really the war in Ukraine, because Ukraine is the world's largest producer of sunflower oil. So when the war happened and the sunflower oil stopped coming from Ukraine, there was this substitution effect and everybody rushed to get rapeseed oil and palm oil and olive oil. And so prices of all these oils have gone up across the board. And so Indonesia's decision is to protect its domestic consumers. And so, yeah, it's going to be another global knock-on effect where it'll just add to already high prices for not just palm oil, but all of these other oils as well.
That was WSJ consumer goods reporter Sabra Chowdhury. Sabra, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, Airbnb says it will soon let its workers work from anywhere without taking a pay cut. We've got that story after the break.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Home rental company Airbnb is telling its staff they can work from almost anywhere in the world as a part of a simplified new policy that the company's CEO hopes encourages other companies in Silicon Valley to offer greater flexibility to. WSJ reporter Preetika Rana covers recently public tech companies for us and joins us with more on the fine print about this new policy. Hi, Preetika.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you for being with us. So why is Airbnb doing this and how do they know this plan is actually going to work?
Right. So Airbnb is primarily doing it for two reasons. They say the pandemic has fundamentally shifted the way that we think about work and travel and that those changes are here to stay. And with those changes, employees want greater flexibility. If you were based in San Francisco, where the company's headquartered, and you want to move closer to family, or you want to just travel and live your dream, and you couldn't do that earlier because you were tied to a desk and chair, you can go and do that. And what they're saying is, we don't want to lose out on the top people because we're forcing people to come back to the office. The other reason is that it's hoping that it can be a model for other companies to follow, and that could have business implications for them. If everyone were to allow their employees to be remote forever and potentially even work overseas, then they would possibly book Airbnbs while traveling, and the company stands to gain, not just in terms of retaining the top talent, but also maybe in its home rental bookings.
What Airbnb is doing here is a pretty big change from how work has been done in the past. What are the hurdles for companies who want to shift to a model like this?
You're absolutely right. And Airbnb has gone a step further in saying not only can people work from their home country, but they can work from overseas for 3 months at a time. And so the main reason why a lot of other companies haven't gone that far is because it's just very complicated with pay and taxes. So what Airbnb has said is that it's going to take care of all of it. And I spoke to CEO Brian Chesky before the move was announced, and he said, you know, we're going to open source our solutions so that other companies can use it as a guide to follow. How this works in real life is yet to be seen. Airbnb has said that everyone has to stick to West Coast time no matter where they are. But how will that really work in practice? What about new employees who join and who've never seen their coworkers?
I mean, all of this has just got to be an HR nightmare, right? Things like taxes, health insurance, immigration laws, work authorizations, those have all got to be factors here too, right?
Yeah, that's right. So what Airbnb said is that you can work for up to 3 months in 170 countries where Airbnb has a presence. What Airbnb is separately doing, which is pretty interesting, is that they are working with governments on so-called digital nomad visas. So Mr. Chesky, the CEO, said there are more than 20 countries, including Greece, Portugal, Mexico, Spain, that offer these digital nomad visas, which make it possible for foreigners to work there for extended periods of time, and that his company is actively speaking with other major governments to issue more such visas elsewhere so that it's not just easy for their own employees, but potentially for other workers if more companies want to adopt this.
Many companies link the pay of their employees to the cost of living in the cities where they work. How is Airbnb approaching location-based pay here?
You know, it's been a pain point for a lot of people who wanted to relocate to less expensive cities. And it's also been a pain point for companies to figure out how they now compensate workers. So what Airbnb has basically done is that they've said they're going to get rid of location-based pay. And for US and Canada employees, those are the two countries where they do have pay based by location, they are going to move everyone to the top paying bracket. So if you were in a smaller city and you were in the bottom percentile in terms of pay, you're now going to get a raise. You're now going to be making as much as your peers in, say, a more expensive city were making. It's a pretty sweet deal, if you ask me.
That was WSJ reporter Preetika Rana, who covers recently public tech companies for us in the Bay Area. Preetika, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on the show.
If you're interested in hearing more about Airbnb's work from anywhere policy, Airbnb CEO Brian Chesky spoke to our sister podcast, The Journal, about the genesis of this new policy and his view that other employers would be wise to embrace flexible work arrangements.
Now you have a choice. I either can hire the best people in the world everywhere, or only a subset that happen to live within a 30-mile radius of one of my offices. And the benefit of people being near your office is not enough to overcome the fact that you can get the best people in the world and you can be more diverse if you recruit around the world. And so that was kind of where I started. We should be more flexible. And obviously, we should walk the talk.
You can check out The Journal's full interview with Airbnb CEO Brian Chesky on their podcast feed later today. And finally, autocorrect. Our phones may be cutting-edge computers, but that purportedly smart typing software that lives inside them can still leave us in hilarious and awkward text exchanges, especially when we try to say a certain four-letter expletive until autocorrect says, "You meant this water bird, right?" Well, former Apple employee Ken Kashenda, who created the iPhone's autocorrect software and left Apple in 2017, says that linguistic switcheroo was never his intention.
I promise you, on the original iPhone, that if you typed a certain four-letter word that begins with F, if you typed it exactly, the keyboard would leave it alone, so you could have your cusses. But if you missed one of those letters, it wasn't going to correct to the cuss word.
You can hear the full story about how autocorrect works and sometimes doesn't work, as well as how to optimize it, on the WSJ Tech News Briefing podcast, which we've left a link to in our show notes. And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.